Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you for joining us, everybody. It's a pleasure to have you with us. We're live on Close Up Radio Live. I'm your host, Jim Masters, as that fine announcer just so eloquently introduced. And it's my pleasure to introduce Sherry Schwab to our show. Sherry is coming to us from Marathon, Florida, and she's the CEO of Domestic Abuse Shelter of the Florida Keys. She was with us back in 2018 informing us about the extraordinary work. She has lots more to share because the world has certainly changed since 2018 and 2024, and a lot of incredible things that she's working on and still working on today. This is an organization where they offer services to those individuals, both women and men, that are the victims of intimate partner domestic violence. The Domestic Abuse Shelter, which services all of Monroe County, Florida, maintains three outreach locations: Key Largo, serving the Upper Keys, Marathon, serving the Middle Keys, and Key West, serving the Lower Keys. The Domestic Abuse Shelter specializes only in intimate partner violence. Now, you might not have even heard it described that way, right? You just hear domestic violence, and that's it. Well, we're going to break this all down, as Sherry so eloquently does, tell you what it's all about, and the services that are provided at the Domestic Abuse Shelter of the Florida Keys that can really be incredibly helpful and hopeful. They provide emergency shelter and a 24/7 crisis hotline to which all services can be accessed, because domestic violence and intimate partner violence is a power and control issue. It's pervasive situations that are ongoing, which keep control of the intimate partner. Doesn't necessarily have to be physical violence, although it could be. Very often, the abuser will shift blame to their victims. If you didn't do this, I wouldn't have done that. Sadly, there is really not much of that awareness that is needed, with many not directly involved having the false sense that it doesn't happen in their community, while it can and it does. It's often kept behind closed doors where people can't see it. You're not alone, says Sherry. There are places where you can go to find safety and to learn ways to continue to really enjoy a life free of domestic violence. Someone does care about you. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, we do encourage you to call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233, 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. We're also going to tell you how you can connect with Sherry and her team of resources. First, let's welcome her back to Close Up Radio Live, Sherry Schwab, joining us from Florida. Sherry, welcome to the program. It's a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Jim. That's quite some introduction. It's like you seem to have about covered it, but, you know, you and I, we never have fall short of things to talk about on top of that. I'm very happy to be here. I've been looking forward to it. And you're right, things have changed a lot since 2018. I mean, I first came to the Keys in March of 2017 as my third domestic violence center in my professional career with domestic violence, which started in 1998 as an intern. And there are 40 centers in the state of Florida, sister centers, and we're all kind of governed by the guidelines of the Department of Children and Families and Florida statute. And, you know, one of the differentiations, and, you know, when you talk about intimate partner violence, you know, it's something, you know, within recent years, but not terribly recent, where we've started using that term instead of domestic violence in general, because Florida statute, when you look at domestic violence, includes all family members. It could be sibling on sibling and, you know, parent on child or, you know, different types of family relationships, where the services that we provide are strictly for intimate partner relationships, where the abuse has taken place within an intimate partner relationship.
It's really amazing, and you really break it out so beautifully. Your definition of domestic violence, tell us that.
Well, domestic violence is an issue of power and control. It's an attempt of one person to assert coercive behavior against another person to get them to do what they want them to do. You know, it sounds pretty simple when I say it, but I've been doing it a long time, and, you know, a lot of times that's the misunderstood part. It is about, and it's not always physical. You know, sometimes it becomes physical, but it doesn't have to be physical in order to be considered intimate partner violence. There are a lot of different forms of the violence. And, you know, you make a reference to the power and control wheel where, you know, if folks wanted to look that up, it's easily found. Excuse me. It follows from the Duluth model of domestic violence, which was created many years ago. But some of the different forms of the power and control are intimidation, where, you know, making the survivor, the victim, afraid just by, you know, using looks or actions, gestures, maybe smashing things, destroying property, you know, abusing pets, even just displaying weapons. I mean, a weapon in itself, if it's laid out on the kitchen table or if they're sitting there cleaning it, you know, it's meant to be an intimidating issue if it's within a relationship where there is sexual or domestic abuse. There's emotional abuse, you know, putting them down, making them feel bad about themselves, calling them names, making them think they're crazy. You know, there's a thing that's actually labeled, it's called gaslighting, where, you know, a survivor is told, like, I never said that, you're crazy. And, you know, and before long, like, you don't know whether you're crazy or not because you've been told it so much, you start to, you know, question your own reality. There's a lot of isolation in these relationships, and, you know, which is something that is kind of, it's easy to see in a general way because I've done this work in different areas of the state, but it's real easy to see when you look at the keys because, you know, sometimes like that concept of isolation, you know, it kind of gets hidden in, they end up in the Keys. It's like, oh, let's move to the Keys, you know, we'll go, we'll live in paradise. And before you know it, here they are, they're living in the Keys. They're cut off from their families. They're cut off from their other support systems, and they really have nowhere to turn. And, you know, which is why we try and make it as known in the community as we can that we are available. And that, you know, these are the signs and symptoms of an intimate partner relationship and how a person can reach out and get help. Because, you know, it's not always, you know, that the physical abuse that people talk about. You know, a lot of times the survivor will say, the physical abuse, that's kind of on the easy side. You know, the bruises, you get the bruise, it heals, it goes away, and, you know, life kind of goes on. But these other behaviors, they're like pervasive and ongoing. It's a daily routine of some of these other kinds of abuses where there also is minimizing, denying, blaming, you know, making light of the abuse, acting like it didn't happen, not taking the person's concern seriously, you know, even saying that it didn't happen. Oh, that's not what really happened. Or just shifting the responsibility. Like you had mentioned, you know, if you didn't do this, I wouldn't have had to do that. So if you just would not, whatever, fill in the blank, then, you know, everything would be okay. And, you know, to use children in these situations, it's, you know, women stay, survivors stay, the majority of them are women, but there are men who are also survivors of domestic violence. A lot of times they will stay because of the children. A lot of times the time that they make a decision to leave is when they actually identify that the children have become involved. They will leave to protect their children. They will leave to protect their children far quicker than they will leave to protect themselves. And, you know, the children are often used by the perpetrator in the relationship. A lot of times they will use the child to relay messages. They use visitation to harass the survivor. They threaten to take the children away. And so the survivor does whatever is necessary to avoid that, the fear of the loss of the children. And economic abuse, you know, financial abuse is one of the main reasons why individuals stay in a relationship, because they just don't, survivors are really, really strong people. They don't see themselves near as strong as what they are. And the ability to be able to walk away and know that they will be okay is really hard. And the financial aspect of it, don't be mistaken into thinking that survivors they don't work, they don't have an income. Many of them have very good jobs and have no access at all to their income, which keeps them financially tied to the perpetrator. And to be able to get away from that and understand how strong they really are, we have an economic freedom program where all individuals are offered it in shelter and in outreach, where they learn about budgeting and finances. Many times they've not even had a successful bank account because all of that's controlled by the perpetrator. So they come in and they learn that, and they start feeling a little bit of power in the ability to manage their own lives. And, you know, they get interviewing skills. And currently we don't always have, but currently we have a part of that program, and it's called Match Savings, where if they can show a consistent saving plan, once they save $500, we match it with another $500. And they can use it for cottage businesses. They can use it for a down payment on a car. They can use it for whatever they need to get themselves in a more sustainable place where they can be safe and not have to return to the home of the perpetrator. So
that's so important.
I guess I've said a lot, so maybe it's your turn now.
You know, I was going to say you really broke it out beautifully in a way that, you know, I think makes it very easy to digest and to hopefully, you know, support as well. Domestic violence, as I said in the introduction, as we're talking about, isn't always physical. It could be intimidation, verbal, other things, right?
It is. And, you know, the threat of violence is kind of the thing, you know, like the outside, you know, in this power and control wheel, when you see it, there's, you know, a ring around the shapes of the pie, so to speak, and it in there is physical violence and sexual violence. And just the threat of that violence helps maintain, keeps everything in place. It doesn't actually have to happen. Or if it happens once, just the knowledge that it can happen again. I mean, it's like anything in history. If something happens once, it's proof that it can happen again. And so, you know, just that threat of violence is always there. You know, and, you know, one of the other aspects that I didn't mention was male privilege, you know, and that is, I'm the king of my castle kind of mentality. I make all the decisions, and, you know, I'm the one that, you know, will be the deciding factor on where we live, how the money's spent, where you go, what you do, and, you know, and to have that kind of control over an individual. I mean, it's like thumb down, you know, there isn't a way to escape that without just truly escaping the whole, you know, the whole intimate partner relationship, and, you know, learning that they have the strength, Lord, the strength it takes to live in one of these relationships. Once they realize that that's the strength that they can rely on to succeed, you see amazing things happen. But it takes a long time. They don't understand how strong they really are. They see themselves as very low self-esteem, lacking in power, because that's what they've been told. That's what they've come to believe as a result of the relationship.
It's really fascinating, and it's so true and so relevant. And again, this is something that, you know, people really need to be cognizant of. What are the different types? There is, like you're talking, there's this power wheel.
Well, and that's what I've been saying is, you know, different kinds of abuse are, you know, the emotional abuse, the physical abuse, economic abuse. I mean, you know, they're all kind of pieces. I mean, you know, and they don't really, like, they don't operate independently. Like, we don't see folks come in and they just got, like, one thing going on. You know, these are all things that are used to keep the person in place. And, you know, you may hear sometimes, too, if there is a, you know, a bad physical event, and you may hear people, not DV professionals, but you may hear others out there in the community say, oh, he just lost control. He did not lose control. Because he stopped before he killed the person. Another proof of did not lose control is, would you not find it odd that bruises and marks of the abuse are placed in places where people would not normally see? Like sometimes they punch them in the chest because they wear a shirt. Or they will grab them by the arm, and the signs of the abuse are concealed. That's a pretty good sign of control, that they know what they're doing, and they're manipulating that control. These individuals did not lose control, and if you look at the rest of their lives, they're not like that guy that throws a cup of coffee across the room at the office. He's not out of control, so to speak, in any other place in his life. Do you not hear the neighbors say when the police are out doing interviews and they're talking to the neighbors, oh, my God, he always seemed like such a nice guy. We never knew nothing was going on like that. No, because he talks to the neighbors and he's like he's the baseball coach or, you know, and I'm not picking on baseball coaches. I just said that. But he's the guy that everybody loves, very charismatic. He does not have this anger issue, so to speak, in all of his other relationships. His issue is only within his intimate partner relationship. He's not the angry guy. He is the controlling and coercive guy. So they definitely are in control, and it's about the intimate partner. It is not about being that way in all their walks of life, because they're not. They're just not. You see it all the time. And you and, you know, maybe listeners now too, because, you know, we see things through our own lens and hear things through our own ears and filters. But the next time you see something like this on a news broadcast, and they are ever so more frequent now, every time I see, it seems like every time I turn the news on, it's something. But when they're going around and they're interviewing, because they always got to, you know, sensationalize the whole thing, they will be interviewing all the neighbors. Inevitably, someone will say, oh, my, he was such a nice guy. I kid you not. Now you'll hear it.
Oh, yeah. Before, such a quiet person.
Before, it would just be like a thing. But now that, you know, the level of awareness is raised on, you know, hopefully by my words, that when you see it now on the news and you hear it, you'll be like, oh, my God, that's what Sherry said. Because it's true. That is what they say. Nobody ever says, oh, I've been waiting for that to happen. That guy's a real, you know what, well, there's always something going on there. It was only a matter of time. That's not what they say. It is not what they say. They say, oh, my God, he was the nicest guy.
And quiet,
so
used to walk
listen
his
to
dog.
A different filter.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yep.
It's really amazing. Domestic violence occurs, would you say, does it occur in one demographic or in one socioeconomic status more than another, or doesn't really discriminate, does it?
It does not discriminate, Jim. If it did, we could all become that thing, and that would be the end of domestic violence. It does not discriminate by race, by gender, by socioeconomic status. I've been doing this work for a very long time. I have seen everything from individuals at a low socioeconomic standard to individuals with a very high family income. People that are recognized in the community as having some status, pro sports players, I've been doing this work long enough and specialized in many ways where, you know, a lot of times if someone would come in and they were the partner of a very visual person, you know, they kind of pull out one therapist to, you know, do the work and, you know, ensure the highest level of confidentiality. I have done sports figures, partners. I have done law enforcement partners. Nobody's safe. Like I say, if there was something, like if you could go be a thing, and because there's no domestic violence in that group, I'd be like, sign me up, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's in all cultures, and there are some cultures where people say, like, oh, that happens a lot in that culture. Well, maybe it does, but there are also families in those cultures that it doesn't happen in. Like, no culture is 100% you can expect intimate partner violence in it. Every culture is different. Every socioeconomic group is different. It exists everywhere. It does not discriminate. It does not discriminate.
Exactly. It's really extraordinary. What are some of the additional statistics regarding domestic violence and abuse in general?
Well, you know, like I say, I've been doing this work a long time. And, you know, one of the sad things that I share is that after 27 years, I'm reporting the same statistics, if not worse, than what I did 27 years ago. And that was that, like, 1 in 4 women. And, you know, back in my early days, we weren't even reporting statistics on men. But now we say it could be like 1 in 3 women, which is more frequent, and 1 in 7 men. Now, does that mean that it's actually more frequent or that it is more frequently reported because it's becoming a little more okay not to be so ashamed of the situation? But, you know, and domestic violence, you know, when you look at those statistics, let me ask you to consider this. If you say 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 women and 1 in 5 men will be impacted by domestic violence in their lifetime, those numbers come from crime reports. Keep in mind with those numbers that domestic violence is the most underreported crime in the country. So those numbers are far higher than that. It could be 1 in 2. It could be 50% of all individuals will experience domestic violence in their lifetime. Now take that beyond experience to impacted by. Because if they aren't actually the victim of domestic violence, are they the child in that home? Are they a parent of one of those victims? Are they a coworker of one of those victims? Now look at how many people in our society are impacted by domestic violence. Everybody barring few, because everybody always, those are pretty broad statements, but barring only a few, I don't know anybody that doesn't know somebody that was a victim of domestic violence. And I might be the unicorn in that group because of the work I do. But when I go out and I'm doing trainings and I'm talking to crowds, the Rotary, the local clubs, the chambers or whatever, and you get people to raise their hand, who in this room has never known anybody that's been impacted by domestic violence? People don't raise their hand. You stand up in a training and you say 1 in 4, and you count off, and you have every 3 out of 4 people sit down, and the fourth person remains standing. You got a room full of people that represent individuals that have been a victim of domestic violence. You know, think about that. You know, and it's hard for me not to think about it because I've done the work for so long. But, you know, when I go someplace and I look around a room, I think of how many people in this room are currently victims of domestic violence and not getting services, or have been a victim of domestic violence, or any number of things. I mean, so for people to think not in my backyard, or not in my community, it's time to wake up. It's just time to wake up, because it does. You know, and I hear that all the time. Oh, that doesn't happen here. Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah. Not in my neighborhood.
It's only because of the drinking. There's a correlation between drinking and domestic violence, but it is not causal. You take away the alcohol, you still have a domestic violence situation.
Got a minute or so left. Let's talk about the process when someone seeks help in your facility.
Well, all of our services are, I'm going to take about half that time to talk about the process, and then I'm going to take about a half about a time to ask people to consider us for something. And so all services are received for us through our hotline. And so they could go to our website, which is domesticabuseshelter.org, and everything comes up, our hotline and everything, the number is all on there. I know we're doing the national hotline today because the show is broadcast nationally. But all of our services are received through the hotline. They call, they do a safety assessment. Are you okay? What do you need? And they figure out whether they need shelter, whether they need other kinds of resources or what have you. But, you know, Jim, when I was on your show back in 2018, we had already lost our shelter in 2017 to Hurricane Irma. And oh, so many years later, we still have not raised all of the funds to rebuild that shelter. It's been a really challenging time over the years for a number of reasons you mentioned. Our world has changed a lot since that period of time, and fundraising has been really difficult. But I have a job to do. I have a job to create those safe beds again in Monroe County in the Middle Keys, and I'm not going to stop until we do that. And so if folks want to learn more about our services, or how they can help with those services, they can stay connected through the link in the broadcast that you and I are doing, or they can go to our website and find out more about the project as it stands. We're just currently looking at kind of going down a new path because it's taken too long, the old path's taken too long. And we've recently got $1 million from the state of Florida, which needs to be used in the next 18 months to go towards this project. And so help me, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. But you know what? We can't do this alone. We need the help of the community, whether it's the local community, the global community, the national community. Every little bit helps. And, you know, it's going to take a community to get the safety back to the Keys. And that's what's really important. There are thousands of nights that people are not able to have a safe place to lay their head because that second shelter is closed. So I just would kind of an action task for everybody is to get involved, open up, you know, wake up. It's wherever you live, there's domestic violence in your town. Wake up, find out about what's local in your center, what's local where you live. Go be a volunteer. Go find out if they need help. Nobody's going to say, oh, no, we have plenty of help. Nobody.
Right.
Trust me, been doing this work a long time. If you say, I'd love to volunteer for you, nobody is going to say, we have enough volunteers, or we have enough diapers, or we have enough hand soap. Call and find out how you can help locally and how you can make a difference in your town. You might not live in Monroe County, Florida, but I can guarantee you there is someone providing services like the services we provide somewhere nearby you. Call and find out how you can make a difference.
That's right.
Because you can. Nothing is too small. Everything. The Boy Scouts have a toilet paper drive.
Yes.
They do toilet paper drives, diaper drives, you name it. There is nothing too small to help the services that centers provide to survivors of domestic violence. Everybody is important and everybody can help.
I want to remind folks they can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. You can also connect with Sherry and the team at domesticabuseshelter.org. That's O-R-G, domesticabuseshelter.org. Sherry, thanks so much for joining us here on the program. Very insightful, hopeful, inspiring, and definitely on the forefront of impactful information. And hopefully we'll get a chance to chat some more down the line. That would be a pleasure. Hope you enjoyed the time with me as much as I absolutely have with you today.
I absolutely have, and let's not make it 6 years this time.
I know. With all the change that's been going, I don't know if we can handle anymore.
I know. You have to work, do it more often.
That's it. Sherry, thanks for being with us. A pleasure. Sherry Schwab, she is the CEO of Domestic Abuse Shelter of the Florida Keys. Real pleasure to have her here. Again, domesticabuseshelter.org, O-R-G, to contact her. And then, again, one more time, very important, the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 1-800-799-7233. Jim Masters here thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, I'll be back in just a few moments with another extraordinary guest from around the world, celebrated exclusively right here on Close Up Radio Live. Till then, for all of us, do have a great day. Thanks for being with us, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.